Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for episode 9 of season 5 of The Amazing Race Canada. And here I am, the queen of Amazing Race podcasting on RHAP. And with me, as always, is the guy that has no trouble finding me, Dan Heaton.
Yes, I do not have as much problem as some people did finding those bees. But Regina, hey, fun episode, I think. Very tense. I'm sorry, Jess, though, that you did lose a team this week.
Yeah, I think that's our top story. Team Jess finally has a casualty. Only took all the way to the final five. And it was not the team I was expecting would go. But I think maybe the real headline here is Karen and Bert inexplicably still in it.
Well, you know why they were still in it, though? Because people were like, we don't need to U-turn them. They're not going to win. That's how they were like, the reason they didn't get U-turn versus Adam and Andrea is because they weren't considered as big a threat. I know I'm jumping ahead, but Karen and Bert just, so we were totally wrong. I had pegged them as fifth place in like episode 3. And hey, they are on Team Dan, so I feel much smarter. But I would think, I don't know, though, they could make the finals. It wouldn't be crazy.
It wouldn't be crazy. And you know, there always is that one team that goes a lot further than you think they're going to go. And Karen and Bert, they're that team. I think maybe by virtue of the fact that none of the other teams ever struck us as particularly weak, we have some kind of mixed bags remaining. But yeah, I was really surprised to see them not only hanging in, but actually racing really well. If they keep racing this well, it's not going to be a shocker to see them in the finals, and it might not even be a total shocker to see them win.
I don't know if I'm ready to go that far, but again, I think I'm reading the edit as much as anything, because they have done this the whole time. We're like, we saw this week with, we found a shortcut. This is great. We jump up into second. They're hanging in there, but yet they still don't seem to finish that high. I mean, I think this was their best finish yet, you know, in third place, but there was still that moment. Did you notice the moment where Bird and Karen were like, I think we might be in first, as they parked their car as the last team, which I thought was very fun. This has happened almost every episode. So something, maybe they're going to be the team, be the like Frank and Margarita team, where they think they're going to win the race and then they're running down the final thing only to see that they are actually third.
Well, we could run through a whole bunch of possible narratives at this scenario here. Could be they land on the mat at the end of the final leg and John says, where do you think you land? And they said, I think we're first. And John says, a stopped clock is right twice a day.
You never know. It's interesting. There's so many interesting storylines coming out of this going into the finals. I mean, I could read into it. You could read it. The thing is, you could read it so many different ways. You could read the Corey and Ivana underdog story again, nearly being eliminated. You could read the Sam and Paul are amazing, that Giver's going to win, that they have this rivalry. We'll get into all of it, but it's just interesting how many different ways you could probably go. I could take a guess on what I think is going to happen, but we could be completely wrong.
Yeah, I think we'll get into this more as the podcast progresses. But I think at this point in several previous seasons, we couldn't come up with a compelling story for all of the teams. And boy, do I ever try. I used to have a Final Four blog post that I would write for pretty much every season where I would say, what's the story here? What is each person, if each one of these teams ends up winning, what is the story that we've seen so far that supports that win? And for some of them, I really had to stretch it. But on the other hand, sometimes when I write that post, it ends up being 100% correct in a really weird, stretchy way. I think maybe most notably season 25 of the US version, when I invented a narrative for Amy and Maya that turned out to be pretty much exactly what happened.
Yeah, you never know, because there's always those weird seasons where the narrative doesn't make sense. Like the U.S. social media season, where all of a sudden you have Dana and Matt. Just I almost forgot the name there, but they almost win at the end. And you're like, kind of like the Jenna Maraska kind of thing. You're like, wait, the edit isn't teaching me this. I don't understand. There's not a story. There probably was. In that case, it was like bickering and then they made it. But really, there wasn't. So some teams just, you no matter what they do, there's not really a story. That isn't the case this time, because even we can say things about Karen and Bird sometimes, but they've got plenty of personality. They can be fun at times. Sometimes Bert tries too hard with the dad jokes. But in general, they have a story. All these teams have enough going on where that's what makes it fun. And we noticed this a few weeks ago, and I think it's especially true now. And Adam and Andrea had a good story about being siblings that got along before, still get along, are very competitive, but it didn't work out.
No, it was kind of a shocking elimination. And I thought they were an extremely strong team. They had some bumps in the road, but they really never turned on each other. They really never got super caught up in all of the drama. And it just really was a rough week for them. And unfortunately, when you get down to five, one little patch of roughness is all it takes. And in this case, that was all she wrote for them. But anyway, let's go back to the top of the leg, Dan. And Regina, we're excited to see again, even though most of this leg did not take place in Regina proper, which is okay because there's only so many times you can go back to the stadium where the Rough Riders play, I guess. And we start off the leg with kind of a weak task, if you ask me. Kind of your let's keep the lights on at Amazing Race Canada and drop BMO's name a whole bunch of times in the service of something that could be done pretty much anywhere.
Well, BMO does make your wishes come true. I mean, how would these kids get their orange juice without BMO? I mean, they need it. They need that orange juice. It's important, Jess.
I don't know how many times I've woken up and wished for orange juice. So kudos to BMO for making wishes come true. Dan, what's your wish?
Oh, there's so many. You know, right now, can someone bring me a giant glass of orange juice? Or how about those beers from last week? How about that? Let's bring the tray of beers over, BMO.
Yeah. If BMO's really here to help, BMO's going to bring me a freaking beer. I wonder if, and again, this is something we miss out on being a pair of damn Yankees. This is something that we tend to miss out on a little bit when we're watching the show. We don't get any of the context. Like, we don't see ads for it. We don't see BMO commercials. We don't see Campbell's Chunky Soup commercials. I have to assume that a big chunk of this episode was given over to winners of a contest that we would not have been eligible to know anything about.
Yeah, that's interesting. We kind of did the school win a contest then, or did I know that the super fan apparently, you know, won a contest, but it's all kind of gray. That all, I agree with you. This did seem to be the contest winning leg. Hey, maybe that guy who bought all the horses also won a contest where he got to buy a bunch of horses. I don't know.
Maybe he won $24,000 and he wanted to spend it all on horses.
It's possible. You never know. Yeah, I mean, I think this is when they go to the elementary school, beyond the BMO connection, this is also something that's really fun for the teams. I think the teams are racing and it's really tense. And you put something right up front where they're like, hey, look at all these kids. We're doing something fun. And they get cheered. And it's kind of a cool thing before a tense leg. So it doesn't always carry over to the TV because we're like, oh, yeah, they're cheering. Okay, BMO. But I do think it's something the teams probably appreciate more than the viewer can.
Yeah, it does get a chance to kind of feel proud of Canada because look at how many cute kids live in Moose Jaw. And it's real fun to squeeze orange juice for them and serve breakfast and talk about nutrition. My sense of it was that the woman that put forth this wish had won some sort of contest, but that's not a total given. And yeah, I think it's always nice to have one task in there that's just sort of them appreciating where they are, even if where they are is a rando elementary school cafeteria. And boy, those kids really appreciated it though, because it seemed like everybody was just having a blast. Like, I loved when they were running in and they had a kid stationed every 5 feet to point them in the right direction. That was really cute.
Yeah, the kids definitely were having fun. I mean, they're on a TV show. I mean, how cool is that? What I didn't get, though, is the kids were all telling Sam and Paul they were their favorites. I'm assuming they just seemed like they looked at them and they were like, you guys seem like our favorites. Because if not, how would they know who their favorites were at the time? But
and why would they be Sam and Paul?
Yeah, you know, Sam and Paul seem like they're great racers. They're nice guys, you know, but I don't know if they would immediately jump out by running in. But who knows? There might have been a lot of chatter or conversation or whatever. But that, of course, obscures the top story of our episode, Jess. Do you know what it is?
The very top story?
Well, the top story of this task involving the sad, sad life of Kenneth and Ryan and their inability to find the right women who will have giver kids. How'd you feel when you saw this?
Well, I think the real headline here is that they did not say they were looking for ladies. They said they were looking for a lady to have Team Giver babies. So I think that's the even bigger story here, Dan, is that there's one lucky woman that can be in a triad with both of them.
Oh, yes. And I didn't even catch that. But so apparently they only have to find one then. Of course, the requirements of that person may narrow the pool a little bit.
Well, there's a lid for every pot or pair of pots, as it were, Dan. And let me tell you, this is the reality spinoff that, you know, I would be all in on Team Giver if a condition of them winning the race was that they got this reality spinoff on Much Music where they have a dating show and they find the right woman and then we can follow their lives as they settle down and have babies.
Do you think this scene was like a backdoor pilot for, you know, CTV's like, we need to find a way to do this. We've already got the show lined up. We've got everyone set. We need a scene. Do you think that is that what this was? Was this like the Gilmore Girls pilot where Jess goes to California and then it never actually became a show?
That's exactly what this is, Dan. This is the backdoor pilot of our dreams. The I mean, move over Kardashians. The Team Giver triad show is going to be the new hotness.
Well, no one has ever been as excited about a hatchback car as Team Giver. So I think when they yelled, at first they were just doing it for the sponsor, but later on they were still talking about, you know, hatchback baby. I don't know. I waver between finding them really endearing and kind of being like, within the minute. So that's Team Giver for you. They're all across the spectrum.
Well, that takes skill. Nothing gets my motor going more than a nice mid-price sedan. So. There you have it.
Yes.
So I think there's really not much to say about the task itself. It was just kind of a nice way to take a breather and show off some of Canada's greatest natural resource, its people. And then we move on and we get into the real nitty gritty. We go to the town of Rouleau, Saskatchewan, which the only reason I'd heard of this, Dan, is because we have a frequent commenter on the Amazing Race Canada podcasts who goes by the name of Rouleauville. And I have to assume this is related. And as soon as I saw it, it kind of all clicked together.
Yeah, I hadn't even put two and two together while not knowing Rouleau, Saskatchewan, with apologies to the people of Rouleau, Saskatchewan. But now it all fits. I mean, so many things here. You know, we've got this big detour. We've got John's background as an auctioneer. We've got the Corner Gas TV show, apparently. I don't even know where to start here. There's just so much going on here. Where should we go?
But yeah, we get to the farm and we've got the cart and we've got the horse. And the cart, like, these things really seemed very straightforward. They were not terribly difficult detours, except maybe the cart had a little bit of finesse to it where you had to find the button on the machine to press it.
Yeah, this was not the hardest. Like, I was talking last week about how the final five is when they really push the racers and make it the hardest leg ever. And yes, there were a lot of tasks, but this detour, I mean, I guess, you know, the one benefit here is with the double U-turn, in having detours that are not impossible, is that you're giving teams a chance if they get U-turned, where in theory, a team should be able to blow through the, especially horse, which was disappointingly easy, unfortunately. I was so excited about this auctioneer task. And while it had some moments, I felt like once you figured out how to point at somebody, there were not that many difficult parts with it.
I feel like if you've watched enough Storage Wars, you're going to get through this task pretty easily.
Yeah. And I mean, there were a few people that struggled. I think Corey was very nervous. And then Adam and Andrea, I think, already being behind, you know, they had a hard time with the pointing, even got sent back to practice, which when some of the earlier teams did this, I thought, my goodness, this is so easy. No team's going to struggle with this. But I was wrong. I was very wrong. They needed more practice. But again, this was not on the level even of what we'd seen last week. This was a pretty straightforward thing. And I think also because this was a really packed episode, they didn't want to spend 20 minutes in one place.
Yeah. And I think basically the entire reason this half of the detour was there was so that John could show off his auctioneering skills. And once he did that, it was like, they're not going to make people do that. So we really don't need to see what they're doing. It's not going to be as cool as John auctioneering. So as long as you took it seriously, it seemed like you passed. And once Andrea started doing that, she even passed.
Yeah, at first it was almost like the teams thought it was too easy that then they messed up. And I did enjoy, we had a question from Owen Craig on Facebook about whether John's auctioneering lived up to the hype. And I think the little part we saw did, But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more, maybe even John mentioning his auctioneering past in a quick clip. Didn't we have a photo or something? We do that with everything else. You know, we saw with the bowling birthday parties for Adam. Can we get something more? Did we get enough of John with this?
Yeah, I really was hoping that they would at least mention it. But no, the implication, if you don't know this piece of trivia, is just that John does all the tasks and he's good at all of them. So naturally, he's good at this, too, without even trying. I think it does a disservice to the auctioneers of the world. But I have to be thinking of Liz of this past season of Amazing Race US, if she knew that this task was happening. I don't know why she would, but if she's following Amazing Race Canada, she's got to be real annoyed because she missed her chance to, you know, subvert a five hole.
Yeah, somehow what would have happened, you know, if they did that is they would have made it a roadblock and somehow she wouldn't have been able to do it. That just seems to happen a lot. Like Canada, I feel like teams always end up most of the time doing their five hole task. It always seems like in the U.S. there's somebody who's like, I've been designing fabric for 30 years and then their partner's doing it. It seems to happen every time. So why? I don't know why. I hate to be a little cynical, but I feel like I have this image of Liz just standing on the side being grumpy while he did it.
Yeah. Although they both got to do the meat speed bump and Michael is a butcher, so every so often, the U.S. version surprises us. But anyway, to your point, I think it was a really good leg to put a U-turn on because frequently what happens is the U-turn gets placed on a leg where one half of the detour is so incredibly lopsided that everybody does the easy half and then a team gets stuck on the really hard half and it pretty much screws them. But no, we actually got to see a team pull a Cowboys, get U-turned, and end up to come back and win the whole thing.
Which is crazy because I would not have expected that. And you really saw, though, horse was easier or took less time because the two teams that did the U-turning, Kenneth and Ryan and Corey Nevada, were the teams that initially chose horse. But the problem with that is if you're a team like Sam and Paul that lately seems to be walking on water right now and has won three legs in a row, is that horse is easy. So you're not gaining as much as you think by doing it. But that was really impressive. I mean, Sam and Paul are on a roll.
They're on fire. They're on the conveyor belt to success, I guess. Here's a little bit of trivia while we're on the topic of the conveyor belt. Dan, do you know what the canola seed was called before it was rebranded to reflect its nation of origin?
No, I do not. I would love to hear it, though.
Canola seeds were originally called rape seeds.
Ooh, yeah, that's unfortunate.
It's hard to market.
Yeah, that you're going to limit your target market there pretty quickly if you're called that. I think canola is a better term, just slightly.
It's just slightly. And it's a good oil. It has a really high smoke point. It's low in bad cholesterol, I think. I've heard a lot of good things about canola oil, probably by Big Canola, but we use it at home. It's good stuff. And it was basically a rehash of that task from season one where they had to load all the coal into the wheelbarrow and then load the wheelbarrows of coal into the thing. It was like, here's a bunch of heavy stuff, put it in a thing and find a hidden button. And not much to say about this task, really.
No, though I would hope that our podcast is now brought to you by canola oil, though, because that was a good sales pitch there, Jess. Should we be pursuing this?
Yeah, we really should. Podcast One could get on this for us and get one of the canola giants in on this. There you go. You're welcome, canola industry, for all the free advertising stateside.
No, but there really wasn't much to this. As you see, I jumped on the canola oil, as you did, because really there wasn't much there. I mean, we did have the case where while this was happening, Karen and Bert got to do the most exciting task ever in cleaning a horse stall.
This was like a condition of letting the Amazing Race film on their land. They're like, okay, you can come, but you've got to get somebody to muck out the stall for us.
Karen and Bert seemed pretty excited about it, though. I think they were just thrilled that it seemed like a very easy speed bump, because I'm sure you're worried that like you're going to get thrown off. And it did put them behind where they could have been U-turned, but not by much. It didn't. How long did they have? 15 minutes to do that?
Yeah, if that. I think the headline on this particular task was the poll question that came across the bottom of the screen while they were doing this, where it was like, what's your favorite poop related speed bump?
Have there been others?
Yeah, there was. It was, I think it was Robin Ryan had to do a poop-related speed bump where they had to find moonshine hidden in a pile of manure.
Oh, see, I didn't even remember. I mean, how could, well, I mean, it was Robin Ryan, yeah, but how could I forget? You know, that's funny. I have a hard time keeping up because I'm watching what's on the screen. And then when the, you know, polls come up, a lot of times I barely notice. I mean, Mike and I talked about this for a while, how the weird detour polls they do, but also just they come up and they're so odd. They're like, are you funny? Are you not? So at least this one was about tasks. It's sad that that fairly lame question is not one of the worst polls they've had this season.
No, it's really not. It's like whoever comes up with the hashtags on Survivor is the same person coming up with these poll questions.
Yeah, like hashtag immunity challenge on that level.
It is on that level. But this one was interesting. And then they had one that was which team do you U-turn? The mental threat? The physical threat? The team you don't like? That was considerably less exciting.
They should have had all of the above, I guess, on there. That would be what you really want.
Yeah. And everybody picked the physical threat, you know, thus proving they're all a bunch of damn casuals, right?
Yeah, because that was the thing, is that Adam and Andrea were the right team to U-turn, not because they're like, I mean, they're physical, but no more than some of the other teams, really. It's just that they seem to be, besides getting lost, better at the show than Karen and Bert. And that was the right move. So it made sense. But luckily, I was very happy to note, speaking of the U-turn, that the teams didn't freak out about it. Given the tension of the final five, that it was nice to see. They were very competitive and didn't get upset.
Yeah, it seemed like everybody expected to see what was going on there. Like nobody, there was so much talk about it leading up to it. You know, Sam and Paul said, oh, if Team Giver gets there before us, they're going to U-turn us. That's just an inevitability. And it turned out that was exactly what happened. They're like, well, you know, didn't we call it? And I think that's one of the benefits, I guess, one of the very few benefits of having a U-turn at the final five is that there are so few teams left and you know each other so well at this point. There aren't a lot of surprises there.
Yeah, no, I agree. It still kind of stinks because Adam and Andrea, I think, are a strong team. But they did have a chance if they had been able to. Well, we're jumping ahead, but they had a shot at this. So I don't feel like it was the death sentence because as we saw, Sam and Paul, we were able to get over it. So I don't mind it as much because one, it did lead to tension when three teams were driving and two, they still had a shot.
Yeah, that's definitely true. They could have pulled themselves out from under it, especially. And I don't mean to harp on Karen and Bert, who did have a very good leg this week. But especially when your field of competition includes Karen and Bert, you have a chance. And they did not end up, you know, fulfilling that promise.
Yeah. And also Corey and Ivana, who somehow always seem to be in really good shape and then get lost. And then they're good at tasks, but some tasks just seem to take a while. So Corey and Ivana just love that second to last spot. That just seems to be their sweet spot right now.
They just kind of hang out at the back of the pack and somehow manage to not get eliminated week after week after week. And sometimes those teams can pull out a win, so I wouldn't discount it. But they have been very up and down, but they've seemed to have settled sort of near the back.
Yeah, and I really like them, and so I'm rooting for them. I mean, besides them being on Team Jess, as I have to point out every week. But now I don't feel as bad because, I mean, I've got two of the final four. Who would have thought that? But I'm rooting for them just because, and I'm rooting for pretty much everyone, but I like the fact that they've just been able to kind of hang out and pull through. And, you know, and they, I mean, they've got to be stressed out, but they seem to take it pretty well.
Yeah, they've had a generally positive attitude, although they've also had enough fireworks that they're not boring because you know how we feel about the team that nothing ever gets to them. If you're just on an even keel, that doesn't make for good television, does it?
Right. You got like the Nick and Matt kind of thing where it's like they're not really getting freaked out. They're not in danger of being eliminated. They're not winning. They're just kind of like, well, we're third again, John. You know, you want to have something more. And there's been plenty more for all these teams.
Yeah, there certainly has. And I think, again, it just points to there's a logical story here and you don't have to make too much of a stretch to find any of these teams winning at all at the end. So yeah, we finish our detour and we go to Moose Jaw. And then we have the second product placement task of the evening, where we have to build a maple leaf sculpture out of chunky soup cans for some reason.
Isn't that what people do? That's like the latest craze in modern art right now, is the soup cans, like various icons of different countries.
Yeah, I mean, you go on Instagram and you find the hashtag flag can stack, and everybody's got their flag can stacks up.
That's great. Yeah, that's. I think we should get that trending. I'm sure that's going to happen soon.
Hashtag soup flags.
How about chunky leaf or something? I don't know. You know, you could go on for a while here, but yeah, this one didn't bother me too much as far as product placement. It did seem like I remember seeing the preview last week, and they just seemed to, they must have really show like keyed in on the stuff falling, because I had this weird feeling that everyone's flags, I don't know what to call this, everyone's chunky flags was starting to fall over, and really it didn't happen that often. It happened a couple times, but I was expecting like it get windy and everybody's doing it over, like, you know, like those, I hate to keep saying Survivor, those Survivor things where the stacks keep falling over. It felt like something like that. And really, Team Giver showed you just take it slow. I mean, they were in first, so there was less pressure, but it's kind of hard unless you put one in upside down. It's pretty hard to mess this up.
Yeah. And if you do put one in upside down, it just gives you a chance to meaningfully zoom in on hundreds of tantalizingly stacked labels, and it makes everybody subliminally want soup.
Yeah. I don't know if I wanted chunky soup, though, when I was saying that. I was just, you know, but it did. There was kind of this like, oh, early on, and then it happened again. And it was like, you know, luckily we did not have anyone talking about how much they wanted soup. So that was a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, I really have to say chunky as an adjective, not the most delicious of adjectives, not even when you're talking about peanut butter.
Yeah, it's descriptive, but not really that enticing. But we did for this task have our super fan judge, Christopher, who I doubt was actually doing any judging, as we've talked about in the past. But do you think Christopher listened to this podcast?
He did say he was a super fan, but maybe he's only a super fan of chunky soup. Maybe it's just like, it was one of those things where they print the contest details on the soup label and, you know, you send in the soup label and it enters you to win or something like that. Did they say he was the Amazing Race super fan, or did they just say he was a super fan and they didn't specify of what?
That's an interesting question. I assumed Amazing Race.
He's a super fan.
I mean, it could have been that he just like ate 100 cans of soup and just flooded them with labels, and that was his victory, you know. So Christopher, can you let us know what it was? I'm sure you want to know our thoughts on this.
Yeah, we have many, clearly, but it did strike me as something where if you are in Canada, you probably were aware of this contest peripherally while it was going on, or maybe not. I know that there were a couple of seasons of Survivor where I think it was Sears sponsored a fan submitted video thing, and then the winner of that contest would get into the casting pool, and a couple of people came out of that Sears contest casting pool, and I was like, I haven't set foot in a Sears in 10 years, so I hadn't really heard of this. But it could be one of those sort of sponsored contest things where you see the logo kind of printed on the labels and it's like enter to win, and then Christopher entered to win. And if you were in Canada and you ate a lot of soup, you knew about it. And if you're not in Canada, or you don't eat soup, or both of those things, you really didn't.
Yeah. And not being in Canada, I really feel left out of this contest. I could have just flown out to Saskatchewan to tell people that their cans of soup were okay.
Yeah. It's a real missed opportunity. But congratulations to Christopher. He looked like he was enjoying the task, whether it was because he was on the Amazing Race or because he was near so much soup. Maybe we'll never know.
Oh, it's these kinds of questions that demand answers from our listeners.
This is why we have a podcast.
If anyone knows Christopher, please reach out to him and find out this information.
Well, he's got to have like 1,000 Twitter followers by now, right?
You would think. I did not try and find it because I don't know if they said his last name. Probably not. But I didn't Google like Amazing Race, or I should have Googled Chunky Soup Super Fan, apparently. That might have worked better. But yeah. So I also should note the Ivana saying that on this task, they needed to go slow and steady, but also as fast as possible, which unfortunately did not work in their favor.
Those are kind of two opposing ideas, but
yes,
they seem to have the most catastrophic crash and also one of the most sublimely Canadian moments when they finally get their clue and they apologize to Christopher for making a mess.
Yes, which they've had that several times where they're like, oh, I feel bad about our cab driver. He seems like a great guy. And now they're like talking about the mess and they're like, yeah, we're really sorry. It's just what happens on this show. You know, I mean, we in the U.S., they'd be like, it was the soup can's fault. It wasn't our fault. It fell. And here it's they feel bad about it.
Yeah. Christopher, you're a terrible fan.
Oh, enough about Christopher. We've got other things to talk about, including queen bees. We move on to the roadblock where they get to find the queen bee while Ryan gets a suntan.
Ryan really didn't have a very good leg this week. It seemed like Kenneth kind of did all the heavy lifting on all of the tasks.
Yeah, the auctioneering, definitely there was one person that had to do more. And I think it is a trend that in general, Kenneth is the person who see, and I've mentioned this before.
Yeah.
He definitely is the guy who seems to be doing basically about everything that is hard. And that's okay. You got to have one person that does better. But I hope it doesn't come down to Ryan if in the future, if there's a test or something difficult.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan has brought his own peculiar charm to Team Giver. Like, I'm not saying he's like the dud where, you know, we've had teams in Amazing Race history where one team member is kind of the star and the other one is there because they have to have a partner. I don't think Ryan fills that role at all. I think he has brought this sort of gormless charm to the role and I'm happy he's there. But when it comes to actual race performance, Kenneth is the real MVP of that team.
Yeah, I have to agree. And that kind of balances well because you have both of them are silly, but you have the kind of guy with all the who seems even goofier of the two. And then the guy who can push through tasks, and they seem to be heading in the right direction here as far as their race performance, too.
Yeah, they definitely did all right this week, although after they were so smug about deploying the U-turn, I have to say it was kind of vindicating to watch them not get first place.
Yeah, you kind of sense that might happen. Like if there was a team that was going to get U-turned and then pass Team Giver, I mean, not partially because of that, but also it would be Sam and Paul. But yeah, they did focus enough on the whole, well, they U-turned us last time and now we got to U-turn them and we've got them. And then Team Giver kept talking about how they were going to finish first. And Karen and Bert should have given them some tips on when you talk a lot about finishing first, especially to the camera, it usually doesn't work. You don't see Sam and Paul talking that much about finishing first. And they've now won 4 legs and lots of trips. So something's going right there.
And let me be clear, I don't think it was karmic retribution for deploying the U-turn in the first place. I think if there was karmic retribution at play, it was just for being smug about the U-turn. The U-turn's part of the game. It's not a bad thing in and of itself. But when you deploy it and you're like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, we really stuck it to those guys. We're going to kick their butts. We're going to get first. And then you don't get first. That's ironic. And that's funny. And we are going to laugh at you.
Yes. No, there's nothing wrong with using the U-turn. And even they weren't as bad as some teams. So this is not like record setting smugness when you use the U-turn. But for this show, especially, anytime anybody seems to get a little bit like that, they always seem to get retribution. The editors just love to make people, you weren't as nice as you should have been. And then that's what happens. But and Corey and Ivana I like the way they approached it because I thought they weren't going to use it just because. But right away, they're like, it's a game. Let's do it. Let's leave it. And they seem to feel bad about it, which is also kind of fitting with this show.
Yeah, they seem to understand on this show when it's a game and when it's not. And you don't have any of this. How dare you U-turn someone? He's old.
Oh, poor Dave.
Poor Dave. I don't feel too bad for Dave. Dave has $500,000 and a whole bunch of trips and a Mustang. So
yeah, he's doing okay, even though he's a very old man.
Yes. Well, speaking of grandpas, we're here at Grandpa's Garden outside of Moose Jaw, and this is where there apparently are a lot of bees.
Yes, there are a lot of bees, and I thought this looked kind of hard. I mean, you're looking, even when teams would say, "I think I've got it," I would look at the screen and go, I don't even know what they're looking at. So this seemed to be a challenge, though. I mean, not impossible. It did lead to a few flips around where, like we talked about, Sam and Paul jumped into first and Karen and Burt went down a bit. But I don't know if it's particularly compelling TV. Once you get beyond the, wow, that's a lot of bees, that's a little freaky, there's really not that much there totally. But what do you think of the task?
I think Ivana's observation that it's like finding Waldo and a bunch of Waldos was pretty accurate. And P.S., there's totally a Where's Waldo that's exactly like that.
Of course there is. But yeah, I think that was right. It's basically, I wonder how many times they asked and were wrong and we just didn't see it due to timing.
Yeah, it seemed like they were just pointing out every bee that was a little bit bigger than average and sort of fat shaming the larger worker bees.
Were you fooled by the cut to commercial? We didn't have a commercial, but cut to the break. When we thought Andrea had it and we cut to the break, and no, I was not fooled.
I was not fooled either. And it's weird to watch it without commercials because they always repeat like the last 10 seconds. So it's like, I think I found it. There it is. And then pause. And then I think I found it. There it is. I always find that disconcerting. They were a little heavy handed with the editing and I was not fooled.
Yeah, it's almost like if she would have found it, they wouldn't have cut to commercials. It's almost like they were trying to add to the drama. And it was not as bad. I will say this was not as telegraphed as last week with Karen and Burt's elimination. But I kind of got the sense when we got to that last task, even though it was kind of tense, you still kind of felt like Adam and Andrea were going to lose.
You did. And they really didn't have enough drama that they could inject into the proceedings to make it feel like it was any other way. Corey and Ivana left early enough that there was really no way around that.
Yeah, they weren't fooled. I mean, there wasn't as much of that. I see John. I see the pit stop. You know, there's the jets or whatever. You know, there was only so much of that they could do, which is fine. They, you know, Adam and Andrea got the montage of the team that finishes fifth usually gets. And they seemed happy. It was, you know, I liked them as a team and they were good.
I think of all of the teams that were left, they probably had the least interesting story. And even, you know, Andrea's injuries notwithstanding, I didn't think there was a whole lot of there. So while I'm sad to lose some of my team, I think they were strong. I think they did very well. You know, I'm okay with it. I think I'm fine with them placing here.
Yeah, it feels about right. I mean, they brought a lot. They brought things to the show. They were an entertained team, but their story was basically, we're a brother and sister. We're competitive. We're kind of fun on camera and we have a good relationship. Like Gregory McBean on Twitter asked, what do we think of Adam and Andrea's chances of being asked for an all-star season? And I have a feeling where we're heading here, but what would you say to that?
I would say it doesn't seem very likely to me. There are other brother-sister teams that you could put in the mix and are far more likely to come back and far more memorable. I mean, they were okay. I don't dislike them, but I think their only way they're getting asked is if like several other teams say no.
I agree. And especially looking at this season too, and who's left, you would think that some of these teams will likely, if there's an All-Stars, would come back. So, and would come back first. So, but you never know. But yeah, I feel like they're in that, like you said, they're in that 11th team that gets added head scratcher territory, not because they're a bad team, but they're not in the stamp it, they're coming back if they want to spot.
Right, exactly. I think speaking of teams that we think are going to come back for an all-star season, Dan, we would be remiss if we did not talk about a topic that we've kind of skirted around throughout this season. We've talked a little bit, a couple of times it's come up where we've talked about what teams we think would come back and what teams we think are going to get asked. And we had made the point earlier that we thought Body Break would probably get asked and that they would say no because they are still bitter. But there was an extra secret scene on the CTV website that seems to disprove this theory. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit. We got a little Body Break cameo, and I'm shocked that this didn't make it to the episode.
Yeah, you would think this is one of those kind of fun moments where basically you run into someone at the airport and it just seems like there probably was 30 seconds they could have cut out of teams trying to do the cart detour that we or look for bees, perhaps, that we could have used for this. Because and also I should mention that Body Break showed up on the Steph and Kristen backseat driving, or I don't think it's called backseat driving. Sit in the back seat and we drive and you talk. I don't know the name of the series, but they've had that. And a lot of the teams that have been with that have been, you know, there's been a few random ones, but you've had kind of the expected kind of fun teams from past seasons. And the fact that they want that too, I think they're not bitter.
Maybe they're still a little thirsty. Anyway, for those of you that don't watch the extra scenes on the CTV website, to sum it up, Sam and Paul are in the Toronto airport on their connection to Regina, and Hal from Body Break walks by and has a little conversation with them, and it's basically 30 seconds long, and they're like, oh, hey, it's Hal from season one, and we're so excited to see him, and he's like, good luck, guys, I've got to go catch my flight, and that was pretty much it. But the fact that he didn't, like, run the other way when he saw the amazing race happening around him says to me that Body Break would happily accept another chance at Amazing Race glory. And I think if we are getting an all-star season, they're going to be the first team that get asked.
You would think, because you do need there. I mean, no, we don't see as much here, obviously, but they are very well known in Canada, that at least from my understanding. So, and they were on the first season of the show. So those two things combined, you would think, and they were also pretty good competitors. So I don't know if they're going to have an all-star season next season, but I would think they're going to have one in one of the next two seasons. So probably it just feels likely to me that it would be fairly soon.
Yeah, I think repping season one, you definitely got Body Break and you got Jet and Dave, and that's probably it. Season two, Spooner and Mickelson.
Suki and Jinder.
Suki and Jinder for sure. I mean, we could go through and cast the whole thing. We're not going to. Yeah. That's not our job, but I think there are teams that we see definitely getting asked that are kind of the most memorable. And then you look at this season's cast and you see a lot of people that will get asked if those teams say no. So basically the Amber Burkitch slot.
Yeah. And also this being recent, they'll probably pick a few. But I think we've talked about this before, so I hate to belabor the point. I do want to mention something very quick. You mentioned Natalie Megan, and who are generally considered the, like, one of the possibly the strongest team ever on the show. And I looked up because I was curious. Sam and Paul have now won four legs. Their average placement, and I'm not going to go through all these teams, but is second. Set two is basically the average. And I looked at some recent teams like Natalie Megan, Gino Jesse, Steph and Kristen. Natalie Megan's average is slightly lower, but not that much. And Stephen Kristen's is exactly the same at two. And Allie Megan's is like 1.8. So my point being, if Sam and Paul continue this run, do we have to start considering them, especially if they win, one of the greatest in terms of skills teams we've seen?
You know, I think they're definitely in the conversation. I think they're not as flashy about it as some of the other teams, but they've been really good this whole time. You really haven't seen them stumble very much at all. And normally I'm like, that is boring. I don't want a team that wins all the time. I don't want a team that's good at everything, but I have to give it to Sam and Paul. They really have won me over. Like, I found myself actively rooting for them at a lot of points this leg, and especially that they were able to come from behind a U-turn and still take first place is super impressive. And that's got to be one of the best individual leg performances we've ever seen on Amazing Race Canada, and maybe even across the globe.
Yeah, I mean, they are trending upwards for sure. But I've been surprised. I mean, just based on where we started, but they've been very fun, and it's been good to see. So should we get into questions? Are we up to that? After I ask my own question right there.
Yeah, actually, I want to kick it off with a question that we got Gonzalo Palma wanted to know if you had to compare the teams to any previous ones in terms of racing style or story arc from Canada or US. And I think what he's getting at here is, do you see kind of resonance with any previous teams? And I think with Sam and Paul, we definitely have to talk about, Jet and Cord, because this was like a Cowboys-esque performance, and not just because you had like a tall redheaded one and a shorter dark-haired one, but they ended up coming from behind a lot of obstacles to take first place when nobody's expecting it, because they are just that good. And, you know, as problematic as I find Jet and Cord in a lot of places, this was a very Cowboys-esque performance for Sam and Paul this leg.
Yeah, I agree. And especially that first season when Jet and Cord were there, they seemed to make things like they would, you know, they'd fall behind or whatever. But I'm not looking at their placements. I don't have them in front of me. But you never, most of the time, they were just like, they were cruising. And Sam and Paul are able to do it without a theme song every 5 seconds, too. So that's an improvement. But the interesting thing in that comparison is Jet and Cord didn't win. And now, if that ends up happening, the comparison I'd make with Team Giver is the obvious one of Mickey and Pete. Mm-hmm. Because not only Team Giver has been more in front of us, like they've been on screen a lot more, but they haven't won a lot of legs. They've been better, but we really saw something this leg, even with the Team Giver Sam and Paul rivalry and Team Giver saying we're going to get first and then finishing second. Now that could go a lot of different ways, like we said, but it could be interesting to see them possibly moving ahead at the end, especially if Sam and Paul win again next week. Who knows? Team Giver slides through. I don't know if it's going to happen. I'm not sure I buy it, but that's another comparison.
Absolutely. And I thought of it even more when Jessica Frey, who is apparently a big fan of Team Giver, left a comment in our Facebook group where she said, stupid bees, could Sam and Paul be any more luckier? And she said, say that in a Chandler voice. So I did. And she said, are we seeing the Kenneth and Ryan winners edit? Because they had the classic quote at the end of Sam and Paul won this leg, but the only leg that matters is the final one. Hashtag Team Kenneth and Ryan. There, I said it. So that's very Mickey and Pete-esque to me as well, because that was their through line. You know, they were very laid back about everything that happened to them. And they said, you know, the only leg that really matters is the one at the very end.
Yeah, that's a setup. I mean, that's what we were kind of getting at earlier, is that setup is totally believable. However, there's other setups that are also believable. Mm-hmm. But I think, because Sam and Paul have been edited in a different way to me than Natalie and Megan were. I mean, they were edited very positively, but almost because they were so skilled. I feel like we've gotten a lot of stories about Sam and Paul, like, well, you have Sam's getting into medical school or Paul's coming out story. So we've gotten a lot of their backstory. Like, this is a comment from Veronique Trepanier. She says, I usually tend to root for underdogs, but right now I want Sam and Paul to win so bad. I'm not sure I understand why. And this next line interested me. Is the show making me root for them? Or are they just building them up now because they're going to crash and burn in the finale? It's almost like a flip of, it's similar to what Jessica's saying in the second part, but I feel like they have been edited, and it's not just the editing. They're cool guys. I want to root for them because they're nice guys, but the show is making sure to show us those things too. So the narrative of Sam and Paul winning and winning because we like them is also there.
Yeah, it's something that I think we can't just say it is there for them, but looking back on previous teams in previous seasons where it hasn't been there is the other key thing to note, where we've had teams get to the finals where we know absolutely nothing about them, and the show doesn't bother to let us know what their families are like or what their dreams for the future are. And Sam and Paul, we know all that. Like, we could pass a test on these guys. And it seems like the show has gone out of its way to present that to us. And I'm thinking, if we want to compare another narrative arc, I'm thinking specifically about Mickey and Pete were another team where we knew so much weird stuff about them by the time we got to the finale. And I was like, why does the show keep showing us all this stuff about Mickey and Pete? Why do we care so much if it's a given that Natalie and Megan are going to crush it? And it turns out it was not a given. So it's true. The show tends to show you more about the people. And we haven't really, apart from Team Giver having a friend that passed away and visiting the town where they went to college, that's pretty much all we know about Team Giver.
They are mama's boys, apparently.
Yes, and they're looking for a special lady. Just one.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I like this thought, because you can make the case for Ivana, because we learned about her, and she even mentioned again, we had the moment where she talked about being a school teacher and about the kids. And Karen and Bert, we a little less there, though we do kind of get things from them. I mean, obviously Mother's Day was last time, but that was also kind of a setup for them finishing last. I don't see it as much there, but we still know more about them than we did about like Robin Ryan or something. So you never know.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's still the only thing I know about Robin Ryan is they were bartenders and they had to sift through poop.
Well, you know, that's something there, I guess. But yeah, so it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens. So let me see what, well, if we got that many. Oh, I need to bring this up. So Sean E., there's a couple things we need to bring up. But Sean E. found a video from the curling task involving our favorite team, Gino and Jesse, where he just put up a small clip. But basically during the curling, they uttered what phrase, Jess? What phrase did they utter?
Give her.
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. It's conspiracy theories abound, right?
Yeah, no wonder this team is our punching bag.
They even were, I mean, they didn't say it even with it, but of course they kind of said it like this. Give her, give her. There was no Ryan and Kenneth enthusiasm there either.
No, I suppose not. But did they say it three times and that's why we have Team Giver this season?
Oh, it was like Candyman or something. Is that what did it?
Yeah, they summoned Team Giver like Beetlejuice.
Yeah, they were, Kenneth and Ryan were manufactured like, well, if you've been watching Twin Peaks, The Return, they were, they're just manufactured now, but there's just so many ways you can go with this. But yeah, it's interesting. I didn't even realize Giver was a thing back then, but apparently it was.
Well, we were told by several of our neighbors to the north that Giver is actually, it's a phrase. It's something people say, but I had kind of vaguely heard of it, and I guess that's where I'd heard it before. But it's not something that Team Giver made up. It's just something they co-opted and kind of blew up to 100-foot high letters and pushed in our faces every 5 seconds. But I must give them credit, not nearly as many times as I thought they would.
Yeah, not even close to the guesses we made. So, hey, so I don't know what else. I have one other thing to bring up, but it relates more to last week. So I don't know if we have other questions about this episode.
Well, I did want to give a shout out to our friend Rouleauville, who points out the filming location of Corner Gas, which is a popular comedy show up in Canada. It ran for 5 years and got ratings almost on the level of Amazing Race Canada. So we got our friend Rouleauville pointed that out and even said that John Montgomery had a cameo in the Corner Gas movie. So this is a very important piece of Canadian heritage here that we have glossed over. And one of these days I will get around to watching all of Corner Gas.
If nothing else, you need to see John Montgomery and whatever he does. Maybe he drinks a pitcher of beer in the movie. I don't know when this took place, but it's exciting. I'm excited to check it out. I was not really familiar with Corner Gas, the show, before, or the movie, before this episode and what we found out.
I'd heard of it. It was one of those ones I'd already kind of figured I was going to watch someday, but there's only, you know, we're in peak TV, Dan. There's only so many hours in the day and shows to watch, so one of these days I'll get around to it. Too bad the original gas station, the titular Corner Gas, has burned down.
Yeah, that is very sad, I have to say. But it's fun to have the little connection there as far as the episode. They did not go to a trampoline park this week, so I was happy.
No, they did not. And I think this did a much better job of showing off all that Saskatchewan has to offer. And really, you can see everything Saskatchewan has to offer by standing on a chair and looking around, because it's just that flat. Anyway, Dan, let's talk about the beer from last week.
Well, so, you know, I actually should have pulled up my Twitter to get the exact response that we got from Team Giver. But Jess, you reached out to Team Giver to ask them, did they use the spit bucket crackers, and do you remember exactly how their response was phrased?
Yes, I asked them, were you using the spit bucket and crackers, or were you just chugging the beer? And their response was, we were just giving her.
Which means they obviously were not using the spit bucket. I don't know what that means about the crackers, but it definitely was that. And then we got our good friend, Mr. Paul from Sam and Paul, who jumped in, Paul Mitzkopoulos, who said, we definitely did not use the spit bucket / crackers. First beer in 5 weeks was tasting too good to pass up. Now, one, the fact that Paul jumped in and answered was awesome. Hi, Paul. How's it going? But also the fact that they, like we suspected, were drinking because they had not had beer is also kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, I love being right. But if you're that keen on beer after only 5 weeks, I don't know, man, you might have a problem.
Yeah, but after, here's the thing. I don't think it's just the 5 weeks. It's also the stress of the Amazing Race.
True. Yeah.
Give me one, put me on one leg of the race and I'll be like, give me a beer, please. That was too much. Just because of the stress on your brain. So after 5 weeks, I can see it. They probably weren't thinking like, well, I should spit so that I can be a better racer. And I don't know who I'm imitating there. That was just serious racer man. So they were thinking, please, this has been too stressful. So apparently they must not serve beer in the buffets at the pit stops, I guess.
I would have thought that every craft services table in Canada comes standard with a keg of Molson, but I guess I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing. You would think that the teams would get something, but apparently it's a sober race.
Yep. Silly old dry races. And with John Montgomery hosting, nevertheless.
I don't think it's probably sober for John, but not that I'm not making any comments about how John acts on the show. It's just how it's looking. So next week is the final four.
Yeah, it's gone by shockingly fast, and I'm excited to see what happens next week. Although I legit had nightmares after watching that preview.
Yeah, Alex Wilpon even mentioned that the bees and the cockroaches would be her Amazing Race kryptonite. That was a little too fear factory for me. I hate to comment on a task where we saw, but like seeing the bug on like Kenneth's face and everything, I was like, really? And what are they going to have to do? Is this one of those things like when they go in the shark tank and they just kind of stand there for 15 minutes or what? I'm just curious, like, are they going to have to do something while the bugs are on their head, or is the whole task just standing there?
Yeah, I really am going to need some brain teaser component of that. Like, do math while bugs are crawling on you. But you're right, Dan. This is a little too off of the Amazing Race beaten path for me, especially since those did not look like bugs that are native to Canada. I'm sorry. Those looked like hot and humid bugs, not cool, dry bugs.
You don't think somehow Sault Ste. Marie just has certain native bugs that they wanted to bring in for the episode?
I could believe that mosquitoes get that big in Canada, but I'm not believing it of the cockroaches.
Yeah, I think you've got something there. But regardless, it sounds like we've talked about, barring something crazy, they're going to eliminate somebody and get into the finale. So it's going to be exciting. Now I don't know who to pick. I would have picked it would be Karen and Bert. I still think it's going to be, but really anyone to me, I think Sam and Paul and Team Giver will be in the finals. The other team is hard to say.
I could make a case for Team Giver being the fan favorite fourth place team, but I think you're absolutely right. I still see Karen and Bert going out at this point. And maybe it's just because, again, they're the team that we seem to know the least about and the team that seems to do the least well. But on the other hand, the fourth place elimination is frequently a shocker. And Karen and Bert at this point would not be a shocker, obviously.
Right. I told Team Giver is fourth place early in the season, but now I'm not so sure.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll just have to find out. And we'll find out in just a few days here. So I think with all of that, it's about time to wrap things up. Dan, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, it was a fun episode, and I'm excited about the next couple weeks.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to be a fun finale, no matter which three of these teams ends up in it. So at this late stage, I'm sure anybody listening to this podcast already knows how to watch Amazing Race Canada if they themselves are not Canadian, but it is still the number one most frequently asked question we receive as Amazing Race Canada podcasters is, hey, you guys aren't Canadian, and well spotted, we're not. How do you watch Amazing Race Canada when you don't live in Canada? And the answer to that is we get a lot of links and a lot of helpful tips from our fellow patrons in the Rob Has a Podcast patron group on Facebook. And to become a member of that group is just one of the perks that you get when you support Rob Has a Podcast on Patreon. So you just go to robhasapodcast.com/Patreon to get all the details about how you would access that. And becoming a patron also gives you access to exclusive videos, a lot of extra podcast content. There are prizes at all the various levels, and it's really a great way to support Rob Has a Podcast and all this amazing content that gets produced for not just this program, but many other fine programs as well. And we are always happy to hear from you. We love getting feedback in all of its forms. You can go to robhasawebsite.com and find the thread for this episode and leave a comment if you have extensive feedback. We always love hearing from you there. And we also can be tweeted at. You can tweet at me at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton. And if you really want a hashtag for this episode, is Chunky Leaf a good hashtag?
I was going to go with Chunky Flags.
I think Chunky Flags is better. Chunky Leaves, I don't know. That sounds like there could be some dangerous connotation or unfortunately gross things with that. So yeah, let's do Chunky Flags. I think that's good.
I got to be honest, when you put the word chunky in front of anything, it gets a little gross.
Yes, there's really no good thing there. But yeah, if you get this far and you want to tweet that out, that'd be awesome.
And if you want to talk about the next episode with us, obviously we don't get to watch it live down here in sad America, but you can feel free to tweet at us at any point after you finish the episode to ask your questions or get clarification or just talk about the episode with us, because we know that being spoiled about the episode is a hazard of the job. So we'll get around to watching the episode as soon as we can, and then we'll get back to you. So thanks to everybody who's been engaging with us.